The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Tuesday, Gary, how the heck are you?
I'm not ready.
You're not?
I could read different analysis on the Supreme Court decision for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And still have questions.
Well, it's interesting because we were talking yesterday, one of the cases that was on the docket and ready for an opinion was the case about sports betting. And that decision actually did come down on Monday. And so the Supreme Court struck down that federal law that prohibits states from allowing sports betting. And that opens up, you know, I guess the questions in terms of what kind of precedent this might set. And there's different analysis on that. And other items that might affect.
We were just having the discussion here. We were reading from SCOTUSblog.com and Amy Howe, who wrote, the decision not only opens a door for states around the country to allow sports betting, but it could also give significantly more power to states generally on issues ranging from the decriminalization of marijuana to sanctuary cities. Now, you and I were discussing this just the last 30 seconds we got into the discussion on that and our initial, because, again, we read it and then we were discussing it, so we really... for less than 10 seconds, and then we were on the air.
Right.
And it was like both you and I said, well, we might be able to see the decriminalization of marijuana, but sanctuary cities, we don't see it because the federal government has absolute authority when it comes to anything at our borders.
Yes, that is protecting our borders falls under national defense. So that is outlined clearly in the Constitution. There's no way a state can come in and say, no, we're not going to create these zones, and we get to do this because of states' rights. No, the federal government has the right to go in and enforce that border. Because if you were to say that, and I would have to, you know, have Amy here to, you know, extrapolate that out. But, I mean, you could take it in one direction and say that then ultimately states like California could shut ICE or the Border Patrol completely out of the state.
Right.
Forget about cooperating or deciding they're not going to cooperate with them. They could say the federal government has no right and no jurisdiction within our states, along our borders, or anywhere else in the state, and that's blatantly false.
Now, because what she wrote, and I'll read the beginning of it, the Tenth Amendment provides that if the Constitution does not either give a power to the federal government or take that power away from states, that power is reserved for the states or the people themselves. The Supreme Court has long interpreted this provision to bar the federal government from commandeering the states to enforce federal laws or policies. Today, the justices ruled that the federal law that bars states from legalizing sports betting violates the anti-commandeering doctrine. The decision not only opens a door, as we were just talking about, for states around the country to allow sports betting, but it also could give significantly more power to states generally on issues ranging from the decriminalization of marijuana to sanctuary cities.
Yeah. No.
And the Supreme Court precedent that you would look on that, because, you know, when we had talked about, for example, illegal immigration, is the Supreme Court ruling that even the state of Arizona does not have the right to even assist federal law enforcement in doing the law if the federal government doesn't want their assistance.
Right. Yeah, you're prohibiting at that point.
And both you and I, and again, you know, there are things when you get into the minutiae of issues out there where you say, I don't know. And you and I have always talked about the fact that, well, the federal government, you know, has jurisdiction over the borders. But does that mean that a state that's on a border doesn't have a right to assist the federal government in the protection of their border? When do states' rights supersede the federal government authority, or when should they be shared? And could there be a Supreme Court decision, I don't know, 50 years from now, that looks at it in a different way and says, well, look, you know, on immigration, it's, you know, we understand that it's a federal, you know, responsibility in the federal government. You know, that's one of the responsibilities that they have. But the fact is, it's also a shared border with the state. And so the state also has some responsibility to their citizens to help protect their citizens if the federal government does not enforce the federal law. Because you're in a unique position where the border just doesn't affect the country. It affects that state in general. And as we have talked about before, you know, the meme, one of our favorite memes out there that says, look, the states form the federal government. The federal government didn't form the states.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can look at that and say, yeah, when you look at that, you say, well, you can make that argument. That's a shared responsibility. But legalized gambling certainly it was never covered in the Constitution.
No. It's really only dealing with the powers that Congress has. And then, of course, that the states have when you look at this decision and they, you know, the, at least six of the justices, including Kagan, decided that it was not constitutional and that there was no severability in that. And that's one of the things in the dissenting opinion that Ginsburg wrote about. It was her opinion that there was severability. She argued for that.
What is it?
Breyer did too.
The severability of what specifically?
Well, that the unconstitutional part of it could be severed.
Okay.
But the six said no.
No, it can't be. Okay.
It can't. The entire law falls.
Okay.
And so, in other words, other parts of the law would remain, and that was where Breyer had a split decision, and he agreed with Ginsburg on that, that essentially it should be, there is a severability factor, they believe, their interpretation in PASPA, in the law.
And I guess when she makes the example of the decriminalization of marijuana, I guess when I look at it, and again, I haven't done all the precedent on it, but you and I have discussed this before when it comes to, you know, not just the decriminalization of marijuana, but the legalization, because there's a difference between decriminalizing something and legalizing it.
Mm-hmm.
Decriminalize, right. You know, right. We've done that before.
In fact, they dealt with that today in the decision. They were talking about if U.S. Congress wanted to come in and write a law legalizing sports betting, they can. They can make that decision to do that. If not, it's
right.
Left up to the states.
States. But on marijuana, for example, I mean, that comes to Congress definitely does regulate interstate commerce.
Mm-hmm.
Now, have they taken the interstate commerce clause to a point where we never expected or the founding fathers would have said, what are you talking about? That doesn't represent interstate commerce. Remember the Obamacare and everything else where that was brought into it. But on the, you know, decriminalization of marijuana, you know, federal laws between marijuana or a controlled, you know, substance crossing the state line, the federal government probably has a great case for making the fact that we have jurisdiction once it goes across the state, that the interstate, you know, commerce clause,
right,
you know, regulates that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you wish to legalize it in your own state for personal consumption, that falls outside the parameters of the federal government. The federal government can't get involved in that. I could see that this precedent could eventually lead to the justices stating that. I would like to hear the dissent on that, you know, from one of the judges as to, you know, what precedent they would use to say, no, you know, the federal government can do that across, you know, across the board.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be interesting at that point. So, you know, everything that I've seen of, you know, on it, one of the headlines I saw out there, the Supreme Court legalizes gambling. No, it did not.
No, it basically cleared the way for states to decide whether they want to legalize sports betting. That's basically what that comes down to. And it also opened the door and said that, you know, I mean, if Congress wants to make that move, they can do that. That's, you know, they can regulate that themselves if they decide to do that. Otherwise, it's left up to the states. So they're free now, to go out
but,
and legalize
you know, that,
it.
That's the interesting point. Mm-hmm. They can't ban it, but Congress can regulate it.
Mm-hmm.
I find that interesting. And again, I would need to, I guess, dissect the decision and the words that they use if, because I guess the next point would be if Congress does not, and again, we're just talking off the cuff here after just reading massive amounts. You're really hearing the first conversation between Eric and myself. Mm-hmm. So if we miss something, please let us know on it.
Mm-hmm.
But I look at it and say, okay, so Congress wishes to legalize it, which then means that they can regulate it. What mm-hmm. does that mean? Does that mean that they can set parameters again, or does that mean they can tax it?
Well, it's like any other. They have regulatory authority in many areas. And so it's like a lot of things that are legal but regulated. And it really gets down to that law itself, which however they do that within the law. And then that law could be challenged in the courts to determine if parts of it are unconstitutional, if they have stepped, you know, beyond their powers. Yeah. Well, I mean, look at how many things are legal and regulated by the federal government. So it's that. It's basically, okay, this isn't, and that's what they wrote. This is not our job here. Congress would have to take that up. And then their job would be, okay, if somebody challenges that, or any other law,
all right, yeah,
it could get back to
right.
us.
So it's more of a general thing that,
yeah,
look,
right,
the Congress can't ban it.
Right.
We can regulate it, but we don't know how far yet because we don't know what the law is
you
to look at.
You can't tell the states what they're doing here when the precedent has been set that these other states are allowed to do it.
That's a great point.
And so these states, you know, and New Jersey was really the key on this one. But going back to 92, and that's kind of the idea. Look, the states can do that. Congress can come in and write a law saying, okay, we're going to allow sports betting and we're going to, and then, you know, regulate it. And then we can determine, or someone can determine, if that's constitutional or not and challenge the law. But otherwise, it's really about the states, because certain states can and other states can't. But more importantly, the states have the rights to go in and decide if they want to do this. So the people of those states, through their legislators on the state level, can go in and decide if they want sports betting in their state, which is what New Jersey wanted.
Right.
So they're free to do that now.
Well, what I hope then is, you know, for example, that all states collect all their taxes through sports gambling and vices.
Yes, right.
That's what I would hope, that it mm-hmm. would all be... you know, the vice tax pays for everything that we want in this country.
Right, yeah.
I don't have time for a lot of vices, which means my taxes would go down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
This
well,
is the, only the sinners would be
right,
taxed.
Right, and we're not sinners at all.
Well, no, it's just that my sins are tough to tax.
Yeah, right. No, they're not. Give it a minute.
Yeah. No, well, yeah, that's the federal government talking.
Yeah,
no, they're
exactly.
not.
Yeah, no, they're not.
We'll find a way.
But it's interesting that they did, in the opinion, they touched on it. Alito, writing the majority opinion, touched on, you know, how states have the, you know, this basically state-sponsored, I'm paraphrasing, state-sponsored gambling like lottery, you know, but it was seen as less harmful, and because you're talking about one or two, and you talk about open gambling. You know, beyond sports betting, open gambling like Las Vegas, which is more of a dangerous behavior. But essentially, what my question is this precedent going to set it open for, you know, states? And states already can. I mean, they can decide. A lot of states, you know, take this up every once in a while, every several years. Should we allow gambling and casinos, you know, in our state? But, I mean, they did deal with that issue in the opinion. But which was fascinating, because it was something you were covering or talking about both on and off the air yesterday, as we talked about this being on, you know, one of the big five cases that people were looking at. Mm-hmm. And interesting that it came down today. But it gives the states now the power, if they want to do that, they can legalize that gambling, that sports betting, And I expect, I'm guessing, New Jersey will move to do that fairly quickly.
Meanwhile, a recent study on the Supreme Court and the Constitution, the majority of Americans believe in a living Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to that. The Malaysian plane crash determined to be murder-suicide. The Russian collusion court case. Every day something comes out of that that's just a gem.
Yeah.
And another one yesterday. GOP rep says he thinks he knows who the spy was inside the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
Bernie Sanders' son is running for office. What's on his mind? A new study, more parents smoking pot around their kids. Seattle backs that new homeless tax on the biggest corporations. The United States opens up the Israeli embassy, and a whole bunch more, plus your calls and comments if you'd like to get in. Lines are open now, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. By the way, this latest study means nothing because the majority of Americans don't even know what the three branches of government are, which means they don't understand the separation of powers, which means they have no idea what the Constitution is about. Therefore, this study survey means nothing. A majority of Americans believe the U.S. Supreme Court should interpret the Constitution in light of contemporary standards, norms, and expectations, new survey show. The survey shows a dramatic partisan and generational divide about constitutional interpretation. The new report from the Pew Research Center called The Public, the Political System, and American Democracy shows that 55% of Americans believe the high court should make its rulings based on what the Constitution means in current times. Wait a minute. Who makes that decision?
Right. It's what you want the what the Constitution means to you, mean?
In contrast, 46% believe that justices should rely on the original understanding of the constitutional provisions. Coming up here following the bottom of the hour, we will explain, and again, we only use the F word, because it has been used by so many on the left.
Right.
And that is the word fascist.
Mm-hmm.
But we will let you know how the fact of how you are closer to the F word if you believe that we should have a living constitution.
Right. Keep in mind right now, as it sits on the high court, it's 5-4.
Yes.
Just keep in mind.
Yes.
Be careful what you ask for.
because to me that's fascinating, because who makes the decision? Makes its ruling based on what the Constitution means in current times. Well, who knows what that is?
Right. For Cobra Electronics, here's your forecast.
No shortage for areas of rain across the country today. We could see some severe heavy showers and thunderstorms for portions of western Oklahoma as we go into the early part of the day. There is a slight chance of rain for western Texas into the southern plains. The heaviest of showers today, though, along I-80, Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio, along I-70 from Indianapolis into Pittsburgh, and the I-95 corridor, north and south. Plenty of showers in that region, especially from West Virginia into New York City. Also, I-75 from Chattanooga into Atlanta and down to the Georgia-Florida line. Good dousing of showers for that area today. Rain for the deep south will continue into tomorrow, with Alabama, Georgia, South, and North Carolina under the threat of the heaviest of showers. Light showers for the Midwest tomorrow, too. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. If you'd like to get in, 866-90-RED-EYE. Coming up here, the latest from the Russian collusion court case. Did you even know there was one going on? We'll have that for you and more all on the way here on Red Eye Radio.
Gary and Eric in the Octagon now. 1-866-90-RED-EYE.
I don't know what that means.
I don't know. I haven't counted the walls in this room, so I don't know how many there are. It could be eight.
When Deep Voice Guy confuses us.
Yeah, well, he's smarter than we are, so.
Just a real quick here, because I just, after talking about the sports gambling Supreme Court decision yesterday, the study that was done, a new report from the Pew Research Center called The Public, the Political System, and American Democracy shows 55% of Americans believe the high court should make its rulings based on what the Constitution means in current times. In contrast, 46% believe the justices should rely on the original understanding of constitutional provisions. The results suggest a recent shift in public thinking and constitutional interpretation. According to Pew, Americans divided fairly evenly as recently as 2016 with respect to the judicial interpretive methods. In an October 16 Pew poll, 46% said the justices should rely on the founding charter's original meaning, while 46% endorsed so-called a living constitution. The shift appears attributed to Democratic voters, of course. The new report shows, by the way, does this mean that the Trump administration and the Republicans, since they are in power, that the Constitution now should be, and since it's a 5-4, as we've said, conservative court, does this mean, Democrats, if you're listening right now, that those five should determine make its rulings based on what the Constitution means in current times in their conservative opinions? That would be the question that we would ask to Democrats out there. Do you believe then, since there seems to be a big shift and it's Democrats that are doing it, since it's a 5-4, and I need to repeat this, a 5-4 conservative advantage in the Supreme Court, should Gorsuch and company make its rulings based on what the constitutional means in current times with a conservative ideology?
Well, because
yes or no?
Yeah, because your own personal sensibilities, you want the court to consider how you feel. What about how they feel?
Right. They're the Supreme Court. So everybody should, the Constitution should be interpreted by how you feel the Constitution should be in today's time, since it's 5-4, do you believe that the five justices, conservative justices, should view the Constitution of how they view it should be from their conservative viewpoint in current times?
Yeah.
Hello?
Anyone?
Hello? Democrats, anyone? Hello?
Anyone?
Or should they view the Constitution in more constructionist terms of what the Founding Fathers believed, and if that creates a total wave of people being upset in the country, then the people, through their elected representatives and the constitutional amendment process, change the Constitution, and we, the people, through the constitutional process, are the ones that control the Constitution of the United States, and not just a few justices of the Supreme Court. Which is more democratic? Which is more F-word? Fascist. And again, the disclaimer we always put in, the reason we use the F-word, is that is a word that Democrats have used to describe this current administration. So then one more time, I have to add one more word. To all Democrats listening, should the Supreme Court make its rulings based on what the Constitution means in current times, and since that we have a 5-4 majority of conservative constructionist judges, does that mean that those conservative fascists should determine what the Constitution means in their conservative fascist mindset of what it should be in these current times.
Right.
I love debating and arguing just in a different way. I always have a little bit of fun with that.
Well, it's what they're saying is they want the court to decide in their favor. They want the court to decide the way they want to decide. The court doesn't always decide the way I want them to decide. We have talked about that. They pointed out Kennedy and his opinion on gay marriage. Really didn't deal, I guess too much of it moved away from the actual government recognition of marriage. And he wrote about people should be able to love the way others love. And my question to him would have been, and still is, who's prohibiting them from doing that? Nobody's prohibited from doing that. And this is interesting that it falls the way this sports gambling case. The states have the right to decide, but not with gay marriage. The states have the right to decide if they want to legalize sports gambling, but they don't have the right to decide if they want to recognize marriage or a marriage that was performed in another state. Or any type of marriage, they can't define their marriage. They can't define what marriage is. They don't have the right to do that. So all of this to say that the high court doesn't always decide the way I want them to, or and I can speak for just about anybody. There are cases where you think, well, they made the wrong decision. We talk about Chief Justice Roberts in Obamacare rewriting the law twice from the bench. And that was something we criticized him on. We went through the language in the opinion, and we tore it apart. Still, nonetheless, it went against, you know, that decision went in a totally different direction. I think the court stepped outside of its role. Should have sent it back to Congress to rewrite it. Words have meaning. Mm-hmm. And we believe in the letter of the law because we are a nation of laws. And so if Congress wants it to be that way, Congress can go back and write it that way. So there are a number of cases that fall in a direction that in terms of the decision, where I disagree with the court. But this is the populist mentality here in full play. And you said all of it really is a moot point because people don't know. Most people can't name the three branches of government.
Right. So it doesn't mean anything, since America has no idea what the country's about anyway. The majority of Americans, right, at least, according to those that were asked what the three branches of government are. And if you don't understand the three branches of government, you don't understand the separation of powers.
Right.
You have no idea what the Constitution is about.
Right.
None.
So if you don't even have the basics, you're on the premise, basically, I want everything to go my way at the high court. I want them to pay attention to me and how I feel.
The new reports shows 78% of Democrats believe the court should look at the current context. So then the five justices, the conservative justices that control the Supreme Court, should look at all of it from their conservative point of view.
Yes, because if that's what you want, that's what you'll get.
Right, because that's what you're stating, that the justices should look at it. So is that what you want, Democrats? Just want to know. Or is this just, well, no, only when we have it? Well, that's not what you're saying. You're saying it should be viewed in the current context. Whose current context? Yours?
Right. We'll have a vote. We'll take a poll. Doesn't work that way.
So there you go.
Yeah.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Let's go to James in Fort Worth, Texas. James, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, guys. How you doing tonight?
Very good. As we talk about the Supreme Court. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I'm Republican, conservative, and I thank God that we have a conservative Supreme Court. I believe they should be constitutional in their opinions and base their opinions upon the Constitution as it was written. However, I believe with my whole heart that if the Supreme Court was ever in the hands of the liberals and the left, that they would have no problem writing their opinions with their liberal socialist slant.
Oh, yeah.
Qualms about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sure. Yeah, that's, that's exactly what they want. They believe in parts of the Constitution, like free speech, but free speech only if you talk the way they talk and you agree with them. If you disagree with them, and by the way, that's the whole point of free speech, is so that you can disagree, so that someone can talk and disagree with you, but they don't see it that way. No, you have to talk the way I talk, and by the way, if you don't, well, we're going to punish you for that. That's how they think.
I just go back, and it's funny because when I saw the story, maybe I'm becoming too cynical. I'm doing show prep yesterday. I see the story, and I'm like, who cares?
What majority, on the poll, do you mean?
Saw the poll, and I just said, who cares? A majority of Americans have no idea how the Constitution works anyway. I said, well, wait a minute. That's my job. It's what I do. But I mean, it's just, I'm sorry, but at times, even I get the tiniest bit cynical when I think, what are we talking about this all the time when the majority of Americans can't even tell you what the three branches of government are? Which, if you don't understand that it's the legislative, judicial, and executive branch, and understand what their roles are and what their duties are lined out in the Constitution, you don't understand the separation of powers. You have no idea what differentiates us from North Korea.
Yes. Right.
And so, as I said last week, or 2 weeks ago, I think, when you were out, and a guy called and basically was trying to make a moral equivalency between the United States and Iran, that there's no difference. I said, that's what you get when the majority of Americans have no idea what the three branches of government stand for.
Mm-hmm.
Not that there isn't corruption, and corruption doesn't exist. We're dealing with that right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a system that was created to make it harder, that if you have corruption, to have centralized power in one particular area of the government. That was the goal of the founding fathers.
Right.
And so if you don't understand that, well, then I can say, well, I'd rather have a living constitution because a dead constitution would be worse than a living constitution. I mean, what's the thought process behind it?
There is no thought. It's all emotion.
And there is no thought because of that, as we have said. I guarantee we'll get no response from any liberals who will agree that the five constructionist/conservative judges should rule on what they feel modern norms should be today.
Mm-hmm.
Which shows a majority of Democrats don't even believe what they told Pew.
Right.
Because if you ask them that, they'd say, well, no, then what do you mean? Well, it should be how what the people believe the modern norms. Which people?
Right. Because they're assuming everybody is like they are.
Yeah.
This is how Trump won, because everybody assumed in these blue states and in these blue areas. Oh well, and they aren't challenged. They go to work every day. They do their thing, and they're not challenged at all, because they live in an area that is decidedly blue, and they think, well, that's how the world thinks. And remember, they They wanted to, we should get out to the Midwest more often. That thought lasted
about
5 minutes. No.
They ever get out to the, remember? We need to get out to the Midwest. We need to find out how the regular people they're thinking.
Exactly. And they even, one of them wrote about it. You know, we're in our bubble here. You know, our big blue bubble. And we don't see outside of that. We're too busy writing, you know, movies about women falling in love with eels.
To go back to yesterday's show at this time.
It's a throwback to yesterday's show. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Shape of Water.
Oh, I'm telling you, worst movie I've ever seen. Ever. I mean, just the worst.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
This hour is sponsored by Freightliner. Run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
So you're thinking that Kelly should set up a fake Twitter account for the president.
Here's
where
what
he
we do.
Tweets and...
And he thinks he's tweeting in the Twitterverse, but it's a fake account. It goes nowhere.
I mean...
And you could actually set up your own algorithm, you know, for, you know, however millions of... you know, followers he has on Twitter, you kind of recreate that entire thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you also get like a fake Ben Shapiro, just to make it look real. You get a fake Ben Shapiro account to, you know, do the good Trump, bad Trump thing that he does. You know, you kind of just recreate, you know, Twitter for him, but it's his tweets aren't really going out. Because after his tweets over the weekend, late Sunday... about, you know, that phone company in China.
ZTE.
They, too many jobs lost in China. Okay. That's not what your base is concerned about.
No.
In fact, I'm not sure anyone in the States is concerned about job losses in China.
Well, you and I both saw that, we said, wow. Just this from the Wall Street Journal editorial board. Mm. Donald Trump vows to challenge China's trade abuses, but then how to explain his extraordinary intervention Sunday to rescue the Chinese firm ZTE? The answer lies in the arbitrary and transactional nature of Mr. Trump's trade policy, which has economic and political costs. Last month, the Trump administration barred U.S. companies from selling to ZTE for 7 years. But on Sunday, Mr. Trump tweeted that the president of China and I are working together to give massive Chinese phone company ZTE a way to get back into business. Too many jobs in China lost. Commerce Department has been instructed to get it done with an exclamation mark. End of quote.
Yeah.
The decision stunned even Mr. Trump's inner circle. Not least because it undermines his own policy.
Mm-hmm.
The Commerce Department found overwhelming proof that ZTE sold telecom equipment containing U.S. technology to 5 embargoed countries, Iran, Sudan, North Korea, Syria, and Cuba. Now, in case you didn't know, back in 2016, the Obama administration banned ZTE from purchasing U.S. components.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Then it gave them a second chance, and the company agreed to pay a $1.2 billion fine and punish the employees responsible. They didn't carry out the punishments, lied to the U.S., got caught again. As they say, giving ZTE a third chance is just a terrible precedent. The company used an elaborate system of shell companies to deceive the U.S., and the deception came to light only after the internal documents leaked. Far from punishing the employees responsible, ZTE paid them bonuses. We had said this before that, and we were concerned for a short time when the president came out, and still we have no idea because of this, how the president has seemingly flip-flopped on this and may flip-flop again. He hasn't yet, though, on this after a couple of days. But we said, look, when he came out and said, we're going to do, remember during the campaign, 45% across the board tariffs on everything coming in from Mexico. And what was it, 35% from everything coming in from China. Mm-hmm. We said he won't do it because the stock market will crash. When the president was talking about enacting steel tariffs and aluminum tariffs on everybody, not because of unfair trade practices, but just to protect the U.S. industries, stock market did what? It went down drastically.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that point, he could see it. And as we know, Larry Kudlow, then after he fired his last after his last economic advisor left, then he brought in his new economic advisor, Larry Kudlow. And at the time, I said, good decision. That's like hiring me. And then we saw the rhetoric, sort of drop a little bit. And the fact is, when you look at NAFTA, when you look at the European Union, the fact is there's not much going to change. There's going to be a little give and take here and there, but most of it will be symbolic and not really affect trade on a big basis. We're not going to put tariffs. And if he does, if he does do that, the stock market will feel that hit. But in all likelihood, we're not going to see what he had initially said in the really heated rhetoric, but then this comes out. But that was expected. You're going to take your win. You're going to say, okay, we won this, we won that. Look, we talked about the South Korea deal, and we went, there's nothing really there.
Mm-hmm.
See, we got this. Well, we really weren't selling
U.S. cars. Yeah.
U.S. cars, and they're not really selling anything to us. You know, in those areas where they said, we are going to remove the caps.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the caps don't matter because they weren't reaching the
you
caps.
You never met those caps.
Never met the caps to begin with, so
right.
it was really a nothing burger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we said, okay, he did it, but basically they're going to have to be involved in free trade. This blows my mind. Like, where's he going on this one?
Well, I wonder where Larry Kudlow is on this one, because this is exactly what Larry Kudlow was talking about. And in fact, the reason I think he hired Kudlow was to get a more favorable deal in terms of trade with China. That was one of those things that Kudlow had been talking about for the longest time. I'll have to go back and review some of his comments when he was on television about ZTE. If there are any, I'm sure he made some along the way at some point. But this is, again, as the Wall Street Journal editorial board points out, this is just not good practice to give them a third chance. There's a reason they're losing jobs. That's on them.
As they write, Wall Street Journal, Mr. Trump tends to think of global politics as a perpetual negotiation, and perhaps he figures his ZTE reprieve will cause the president of China to help more in North Korea. China has agreed to restart its regulatory review of Qualcomm's bid to acquire NXP Semiconductors, which has been put on hold and amid trade friction. And the journal reports that China may forego the tariffs on U.S. farm goods that is threatened to impose in response to U.S. steel tariffs. So the U.S. is giving a reprieve to ZTE in return for China lifting tariffs it imposed in response to misguided U.S. tariffs. In other words, Mr. Trump is undermining U.S. credibility on sanctions in order to dodge tariff retaliation on the U.S. farm belt that Mr. Trump invited with his protectionism. Becomes a big circle, doesn't it?
Well, it does, and it makes you wonder, okay, what is going to happen then?
Well, look, as it, we...
You know, because he talked about in a subsequent tweet working with President Xi. Well, all right, what do you mean by that? You're trying to get a better deal for America, right? I mean, that's the point. If they lose jobs as a result of their behavior, of not playing by the rules. We gave them a second chance, still didn't play by the rules. That's on them. We don't have to do anything unless it favors us.
I guess, when you look at it, my point on bringing up NAFTA and everything else and the steel tariffs is the fact that you can play the little rhetorical games left and right, but in the long run, you're going to come down to basically the same free trade agreements that we have had.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to see each side promote something that really doesn't matter as a victory for them.
Right.
But my point is, through all of that, we expected that. But for Trump politically to say in a tweet, too many jobs in China lost, Trump can't do that.
No.
There's a lot of things that he can do in negotiations, but to say for his own political base, too many jobs in China lost, sorry.
Put that in quotations and attribute that quote to President Barack Obama. In your mind, listen to Barack Obama say that. Too many jobs in China lost.
Well, one of the things is I forgot where he was giving the rally the other day, and he talked about H-2B visas. There was a bunch of articles being written about how small businessmen, because of the H-2B visas restrictions, that a lot of them are facing bankruptcy.
Right.
And the fact is, he has recognized that in the small business organizations, lobbies across the country are saying, you got to do something. This is hurting our business. We can't find Americans to do this work. We need it. Well, he recognized it and said it at his last rally. Very little. There wasn't wild applause at his last rally when he talked about it.
Right.
Very, very quiet. And so there are just some things that you may have to do that politically. Trump can say a lot of things. To say too many jobs in China lost is not something that you expect from a Donald Trump.
No. No.
So just had to bring that up because we didn't get to it yesterday, and it was just like, wow, what in the world?
Well, and again, we have to wait and see what action there will be. But politically, you can't send a message like that and expect it to be taken well.
He could get away with saying, too many jobs in Canada loss will affect us because they're a border state. He might even be able to get away with too many jobs in Mexico loss that affect us because they're a border country with, I said Canada, I say border state, border country. They're a border country with us. And you could say, you might be able to get away with, I'm talking about just Trump politically saying, you know, look, Mexico, I understand, you know, they unfair trade practices, but they're a border state and they can't lose a lot of jobs because that will affect the U.S. economy. You can't say it about China.
No. Or California.
Or California.
The Soviet Union of California.
Oh, we had fun with that yesterday, didn't we? Didn't we? That's.
Yeah, it's General Kelly, please create a fake Twitter. It's going to take some work. You know, it would be funny. Then you have what you do is you set up Ben Shapiro secretly, right? Ben gets to decide which tweets actually go out on Twitter, which ones stay inside fake Twitter, you know, where he does the good Trump, bad Trump. Okay, that's good Trump.
Yes,
that
exactly.
One can go out, right? I don't know how to explain. There's no way. In my mind, when I read this,
I thought it was fake. I said,
well,
somebody hacked his Twitter account is what I thought.
Or they misquoted him or something.
Yes.
'Cause, you know,
but I read the tweet.
The tweet is often embedded, and I'm still going, no, that can't be. No. That's not what he said. The next tweet should read, hey, I was hacked. That should be your follow-up tweet to that. I was hacked. Sorry about that, y'all. Didn't happen that way. I don't know. I just, when I looked at that, I thought to myself, because you and I will often hear the defense on something, you know, that he does, and we might criticize it. And then, well, you know, from one of our callers, well, I think what he's trying to do is, and this might be good if he's trying to, but I don't know how you justify loss of jobs in China. No one cares about the price of tea in China or the loss of jobs in China. No one.
All right.
I mean, people in China do. But.
All right. 866-90-RED-EYE.
When it comes to proper tire care and maintenance, what can you do to improve fuel economy? Jason Evans is Director of Store Operations for GCR Tires and Service, and he tells us.
Fuel economy is certainly something on the top of everybody's mind. So I think the industry in general understands, beginning to understand the importance of things like air pressure. But just to throw an idea out there that maybe not all our listeners hear all the time is check your tread depths. Check your tread depths, particularly on dual wheel positions where tires are bolted together and essentially forced to rotate down the road at the same speed. Because for $2 in your local truck stop, you can find a tread depth gauge. Anything beyond 1/8 of an inch difference, or commonly referred to as 4/32 in the tire industry, between dual positions can really add to rolling resistance. Not only does it add to rolling resistance, it tears up your tires faster. And in a lot of cases, it's a similar condition in terms of a fuel economy as having maybe a brake dragging. That may be a tidbit out there for the listeners to really key in on, because mismatched tread depths on duals can really add to rolling resistance.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
Yeah, I just so you know, we were chuckling about yesterday's show when we were talking about how what is in the was the California Assembly they defeated the bill 27-22 that would have changed. Was it Washington's birthday or?
Yeah. And Lincoln's
birthday to International Socialist Day,
right?
You know, like
International Workers' Day, wasn't it?
Yeah, International Socialist Workers' Day, right? Yeah. Yes. And our comment was 22 voted for it to change it, which then we came to the understanding, in case you didn't hear it, but a very important understanding. That California liberals find it abhorrent to collude with the Russians because they wish to be Russian.
Right.
Or colluding with the Russians doesn't cut it because they wish to be not just Russians, but Soviets. That's liberal California.
Yes.
Not the three conservative ones in San Diego County, Kern and Orange.
Right. You folks stay safe. Stay strong.
Gonna have their own Red Dawn.
Yeah, exactly. I think they have it every day.
Wolverines.
Yeah, future headline. President Ivanka Trump has been charged with colluding with California to rig the election.
That's what's going to be.
Yeah,
by the time we get to 2020.
Right. Yeah. No. Wow.
Oh, I just I'm sorry. Hey, on these stories, if we don't laugh, we're going to cry.
Yeah, seriously.
So we're laughing.
Not much else you can do, really, in the face of that kind of behavior. Wow. But you know, seriously, how long before they win that vote? How long before it's not 22, but it's the majority, and they get that vote done?
All we got to do
things like that.
Can you imagine some of the discussion? All we got to do is flip five in the assembly.
No,
here.
Seriously,
can we convince them that communism is the way to go?
They were doing a head count.
I know,
trying to whip some votes.
All right, who are the commies?
Exactly. Come on, hey, come on over here. What are y'all talking about? Communism? No, I'm out. No, come on. Let's just talk about it.
Can we,
how do we get your vote?
All right. Hey, where's the assembly whip? Can we whip these guys into communism?
Exactly. Let's whip some votes. How many we need? Five. I can get that done.
We need to whip some commie votes here. Where are
they? Come on, you guys know it's better. We don't need freedom.
Hey, remember, it works. It really, really works. We've always just had the wrong people running the system.
Right.
If we get the right people running the communist system, then it works.
It's funny because you know somebody asked the question, don't we already have Labor Day? I mean, are you guys just wanting another one or what are we doing?
Where's Investors Day? Where's Entrepreneur Day?
Owners Day.
Why don't we have that?
It's every day.
Owners
and they don't get the day off. They work 7 days a week.
Undeniably irrefutable. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
All right, so one of the Russian companies that Robert Mueller...
Mm-hmm.
Has accused of interfering in the 2016 presidential election, is asking the federal judge to determine if Mueller is engaging in a sham criminal case. Foreign interference in the presidential election is a, quote, make-believe crime, end of quote, Concord Management and Consulting said in a court filing on Monday. The company argues the case is an example of Mueller attempting to justify his own existence by indicting a Russian, any Russian. Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein has rejected the history and integrity of the Department of Justice and instead licensed a special counsel who, for all practical political purposes, cannot be fired to indict a case that has absolutely nothing to do with any links or coordination between any candidate and the Russian government, end of quote, Concord wrote in the court filing. Concord's lawyers also petitioned the judge to review the instructions that Mueller's team gave the grand jury in securing the indictment. The company is the only one among three Russian companies Mueller indicted that has responded to the charges in court. Concord Management pleaded not guilty to a conspiracy charge related to creating a so-called troll farm to goad people into voting for President Donald Trump. Mueller has been able to reach the other defendants in the case, most of which reside overseas. Mueller's team must prove Concord purposely disrupted the functioning of the Federal Elections Commission and was aware of the illegality of their actions, attorneys argue. The company's lawyers attached an indictment from 1998 against a California fundraiser accused of disguising contributions to the 1996 Clinton-Gore campaign. One of the lawyers who worked the case is now the judge presiding over Mueller's charges. Concord Management, Internet Research Agency, and Concord Catering enacted a so-called translator project, which began in April of 2014 and employed hundreds of Russian operatives tasked with using fictitious online personas to sow discord on social media platforms, Mueller's indictment asserts. The goal of the project was information warfare against the United States, the indictment asserts. The scheme involved intelligence gathering activities inside the U.S. as well as interactions with U.S. political activists. Concord's goal was ultimately to tilt the election away from former Secretary Hillary Clinton towards Trump, according to the indictment. The operation advanced in several stages over the two-plus years leading up to the election many of the efforts were aimed at hurting Hillary Clinton's election chances by boosting her opponents, including Trump, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, and Green Party candidate Jill Stein, the indictment suggests. Hmm. And I guess one of the points that I would I would look at again, and you know, they're even looking what were the instructions given, and you look at that and you say, okay, is using fictitious online personas, is that against the law to begin with?
You know, I wondered about this when the indictments came down. I thought, what laws are we talking about here? What law did they break? I mean, how many fake social media accounts are out there? Because there's something, if you broke into someone's account, if you hacked into an account, if you if there was some kind of breach of an account, especially like a banking account, we would understand the law there, right? But posing as other people, posing as an organization that didn't even exist. One of the political organizations actually didn't exist. There was one of them.
Right, Concord Catering.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, there was another one that they posed as on social media. One of these 13, they posed as and it was a non-existent group. The point being is, you know, if they posed as the FBI or they hacked into an actual account, then I guess, and I would have to look at the laws, but you could look at something like that in trying to influence or trying to change something through that account. But in terms of posing as fake people and putting out propaganda, my question is, where is that law?
Right, because what is the law? If I decided to put out, I don't know, I'll call myself, I couldn't call myself Fleetwood Mac. Just some word with Mac in it. Mac Enterprises, Mac mm-hmm. Election Enterprises. Mm-hmm. And I put a Facebook post, you know, and that's what I put, Mac Election Enterprises. Hey, it's my own thing that I put together. But I don't have my name in it. I just have it, and everything that's in it is false. It's a fake account.
Right.
And I put Trump is great and Hillary stinks.
Right.
Am I breaking a law?
Right.
Now, I may be breaking a contractual agreement with Facebook if in their rules and regulations I need to be honest.
But there's no law there.
But there's no law. It's a contractual thing. Now, does it make a difference if I'm from Russia or I'm from Great Britain or I'm from Canada and do that? I've got a lot of Canadian friends mm-hmm. on social media. I have some European friends on social media. If they decide, I got a few friends in Germany, if they decide that they are going to have a fake account and they write Trump is great, Hillary stinks, what United States law have they broken?
Right. It would be one thing, I mean, because we have laws with slander. If they say, you know, this person committed this crime.
Well, right? But slander would apply to whether I'm in the United States or not.
That's what I mean. That's slander. What I mean. There are very clear laws when it comes to things, you know, that you could put about someone if they did something, if you accuse them of doing something specific and you state it as fact. I can't find. I don't know what law there would be.
Well,
I don't know what law would be.
Here's what they say in the indictment: the goal of that project was information warfare against the United States of America.
And what law was broken?
What is it against the law to have information warfare? Whatever the definition of that is, because as they're stating, that many of the efforts were aimed at hurting Hillary Clinton's election chances by boosting her opponents, including Trump, Bernie Sanders, and Green Party candidate Jill Stein.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are a Russian operative on Facebook and you put Jill Stein is great, Hillary stinks, is that information warfare against the United States? Or is that simply propaganda stating that Jill Stein is better than Hillary?
Right.
Is that against the law? Because the question that they ask, that they say here, foreign interference in presidential election is a make-believe crime, they said in the court filing.
Because what are you talking about? You're talking about simple propaganda. But there's propaganda. In fact, social media is nothing, well, if not propaganda, from people inside and outside the U.S.
So I would ask this question. If one of my Canadian friends, and believe me, some of my Canadian friends are extremely liberal, musician types, and they're not happy with Trump at all. So if they have a fake name and a fake account, or if they don't have a fake account, because foreign interference in a presidential election, as they say, is a make-believe crime. But if it, and so I guess my point is, whether it is your own Facebook account or a fake Facebook account, if from Canada you say, I hate Trump and I like Hillary better, and you said that in October of 2016, are you interfering in a presidential election and, in essence, breaking a law of the United States?
Because I would say that in terms of accounts on social media, what do we know? The blue check with Twitter. Verified account, right?
Right.
Essentially, anything without a blue check is unverified by default. I can put up whatever it is. I can put my name. I can use whatever name. Many people do that. Is that necessarily, again, is that something that's against the law? If you're posing as a group or as an organization or as a person that is not you, because by default, if it doesn't have a blue check, it's not a verified account anyway. So technically, you could say that most accounts on Twitter are fake, because most accounts aren't verified accounts. So to that end, if you're saying if the charge is that they came in and under false pretenses, well, technically everything on social media, none of it can be verified in terms of the accounts. Only those verified accounts have been verified by Twitter, by the way, not any law enforcement agency. Not any government entity. They don't verify anything. It's the company that does that. So I don't know what law they would be breaking.
And I'm even reading here. I go into Vox.com as they talk to different, you know, law professors when these first come out.
Right.
There are two types of conspiracies a prosecutor can charge. The more common one occurs when two or more individuals have conspired to violate some other crime, such as computer fraud or bribery or some other offense. The less common usage, which is the one we see in Robert Mueller's latest indictment, is a so-called conspiracy to defraud the United States. For this kind of conspiracy, the government must show that the conspirators agreed to interfere with one of the federal government's lawful functions. The theories underlying Mueller's indictment is that the conspirators agreed to obstruct the federal government's lawful function of administering its own election laws. Although prosecutions such as this are relatively rare, they are not unprecedented. As for the American individuals who may have unwittingly helped the conspirators, they have nothing to worry about, at least in regard to this indictment. One cannot unwittingly join a conspiracy. The core of conspiracy is the existence of the agreement to violate the law. Well, and so you see in the second here, as I said, this is conspiracy to defraud the United States. But if you say, if you're from outside the United States and you say, I want Jill Stein, because it just wasn't Trump.
That's not obstruction, because you're not interfering with any lawful practice by the government. You're just saying, they're not saying don't vote at all. They were saying support this person instead of this person. They weren't obstructing the actual process. They were influencing the process, which is done every single day. That's not obstruction. If they went into a a voting precinct and stole all the paper ballots. You know, if they had this big plan to go in and steal all the or break into the electronic voting system, now you're talking about obstructing the government's lawful practice. But the practice itself wasn't being obstructed. It was simply being influenced. In fact, the idea would be support this person over that person. That's not obstruction.
Now they mentioned that identity theft was mentioned in here.
Okay, but did they, in legal terms, was it identity theft?
That's another point.
Because exactly. Because on social media, if you pose as someone else, is that now a crime? Is that a crime for a citizen? If you lie to Twitter in setting up the account, and you set it up from outside the U.S. as a foreign person or group, and you lie to Twitter, is that against the law? Saying that, you know, we're a group inside the U.S., we're not a group outside the U.S. That may be violating the code or rule. I don't know if there's a law.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. Your calls and comments coming up following the top of the hour here on Red Eye Radio.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. All right, so here's where, and again, we don't know the specific things, but here's part of the indictment of the 13 Russians. The Russians allegedly posed as Americans to operate bogus social media accounts, which that in itself, I look at that and I say, okay, tell me where the law is broken.
Right.
Buy advertisements and stage political rallies. They stole the identities of real people in the U.S. to post online and build computer systems in the U.S. to hide the Russian origin of their activities, according to prosecutors. Mm. So they have basically said, because part of the charges is, is identity theft,
mm-hmm.
and bank fraud. Now, I don't know specifically what the bank fraud would be, but when you see that the Russians allegedly posed as Americans, okay, to operate, operate bogus social media accounts, do they pose as specific Americans or do they just pose as John Smith?
Did they actually adopt and use someone else's identity, real someone else?
Right, who existed. Buy advertisements. So if you buy a political ad under a wrong name.
Or as a foreign entity?
As a foreign entity.
That's different.
That would be, you would have them on that. Or stage political rallies.
That would be the same as, that would violate FEC rules. And
well, can I hold up, what's a political rally?
Well, it depended on, again, if we're talking about, is it a rally, a pro-Trump rally? Because I'm guessing, or pro-Bernie or Jill Stein rally? Because if you're anybody could here in the States, anybody could do a pro-Trump rally. Doesn't mean Trump's going to be there. You just have the supporters go out and, I don't know, cheer a blank stage. I don't know what they're alleging here in terms of a rally. I mean, we think of the Tea Party rallies and things that they did as a group. But you would often have people speaking.
Well, here's the point. They say a conspiracy to defraud the government of the United States, the election process.
Well,
what I see here is maybe identity theft.
Yeah.
And they say built computer systems in the U.S. to hide their Russian origin, which means they bought a computer to post on Facebook.
Right.
And Twitter. So mm-hmm. you didn't know it was coming from Russia,
right?
Because they did it in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Is that against the law? When you say built computer systems, does that mean you just bought a computer and said I'm posting on Facebook?
Well,
did you hack into something?
You're looking to mask the IP address and make it appear as if it's originating from the U.S.
Is that against the law?
I don't know what law it would be. I do know, like, in terms of, let's say, certain laws that govern, well, you can do certain online gambling in Nevada, right? But you have to be there, and you actually have to be in Nevada.
Right, but if that's, I go
but,
back.
But the point is that what is the law that, in terms of setting up the IP address, is that specifically the law, just setting it up?
Well,
Are you conducting other illegal behavior as a result of setting that up? I don't know what the law is. I don't.
Right. And they say they stole the identities of real people in the U.S. to post online and build computer systems in the U.S. to hide the Russian origin of their activity. I used my Canadian friends again
mm-hmm.
who dislike Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And they come over to the United States. They buy a computer. They post as me and they say, we hate Trump. We like or we love Jill Stein. We hate Hillary Clinton. Let's take Trump out of it because it's not just Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a felony?
I don't know. I don't know what the law is.
Yeah. I guess that would be my question.
In terms of hiding your IP address, because that's what they were doing. They were masking their IP address to make it appear as if they were here in the U.S. And when they say real people, they use the word real people here, words real people.
Right. That would be
That's identity theft.
That would be identity theft, yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, the question is, what constitutes the identity theft?
Well, what about the people that post online right now on Twitter that say Donald Trump, and they're not Donald Trump, and they don't
right.
have a check mark?
They don't
but
have a blue
on,
check. That's my point.
Right.
What constitutes identity theft?
Is Twitter knows that's not Donald Trump.
Wasn't there another guy named Mark Zuckerberg, and they wouldn't let him use his own name?
Was it really?
Yeah, on Facebook. You know, because you know that's happened, right? But I don't know what constitutes identity theft in this case. Because if they're also talking banking fraud, now that would be different. You're using someone's identity to the point that you're defrauding banks, defrauding other people on social media, or breaking the rules of any social media company. I don't know that that is against the law. I would like to see the law there. We know very clearly foreign entities cannot buy advertising
right.
for political ads.
Right. So if you're buying a political ad under a false name, you are breaking federal election rules mm-hmm. in the United States without question.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the whole point is there's 13 different Russians from a few different companies. Is Concord saying, that's not us? Tell us what the crime is, because there is no crime.
Hmm.
How many specific Russians of these 13, do they represent would be the question, right?
Well, and what are the specific charges as it gets down? Because you do have to show that at each point, each of these 13 broke a law or a number of laws along the way. And so, yeah, that's a good question. Are they saying that wasn't us? We didn't actually break those laws. The only thing we did is created fake Facebook accounts and put on some propaganda. We didn't actually buy Facebook ads. What was the total charged or allegation that it was over $100,000 or something in ads on Facebook?
Right.
You know, so what were those ads? And what did they say? I mean, I would get in even to the specifics on any FEC violation. Now, I know it's you can't be a foreign individual and buy political ads. But what about your friend in Canada or anyone anywhere else in the world posting propaganda without making a purchase? But let's say they have, I don't know, 5,000 friends in the U.S. Is that not at some level considered to be influential? If they're putting something, if they put a video together promoting Donald Trump, they themselves put it together. Here's why, here are all the great moments I love of Donald Trump. They edit it together and they put it on there. Is that a violation?
They have the one defendant who was apparently controlled Concord Management and Consulting and Concord Catering, mm-hmm. that the claim is that his financed operations had a monthly budget of $1.25 million, according to Mueller, which paid for operative salaries and bonuses. Is that where the bank fraud comes in?
Right.
Does the bank fraud come in at that particular point? Now, remember, it's Concord Management that said all this is bogus.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, like I said, I mean, those are the questions that you get into. And they said events were organized by Russians posing as Trump supporters and as groups opposed to Trump, such as Black Lives Matter, according to prosecutors. One advertisement shortly before the election promoted the Green Party candidate Jill Stein, who was blamed by some Clinton backers for splitting the anti-Trump vote. There you go. And then they bought in August of 2016, Russian operatives communicated with Trump campaign staff in Florida through their @DonaldTrump.com email address to coordinate a series of pro-Trump rallies in the state, according to Mueller, and then bought advertisements on social media to promote the events.
Hmm. Well, we can point to laws. The question is, did they actually break those laws?
Yeah, exactly. And my favorite one, at one rally in West Palm Beach, a Russian operative is even alleged to have paid Americans to build a cage on a flatbed truck to have an actor posing as Clinton in a prison uniform stand inside.
Yeah, but we've all done that.
Oh, man. I'm telling you, that's
well, because so it really is interesting to say, to ask and look at this situation and ask, all right, exactly where were those laws broken? I mean, when it comes to banking laws, very clear. When it comes to FEC violations, we can point to those things. Identity theft. But again, what constitutes identity theft? Are they saying that they posed as people and were using real people's identities in order to gain access to a bank? You know, get a bank account because you can open a bank account online and that kind of activity, then those would be clear violations of the law. My question is do they have all that evidence against these individuals? I mean, your attorney's always going to say, not guilty, we didn't do that. That wasn't us. Especially in a case like this. I'm convinced that Mueller did not even expect them to respond to the summons.
Well, that would be the case. And did you not cross all your T's and dot all your I's
right.
because you never expected this to go anywhere?
Right. And keep in mind, still, they have a right to get all of the evidence against them.
Well, they want the instructions to the grand jury.
Right. Exactly
this
what
is,
are
and,
you
and,
instructing
And
them?
This seems to be moving quite quickly because
right.
what we brought you was you just happened yesterday in court.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That they want to know what the instructions that Mueller gave to the grand jury was.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
Yeah. And they have a right to all of that. And they have a right to a speedy trial. This thing is not going to slow down because the law firm representing them is from Pennsylvania. It's an American firm.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to watch.
I wonder if they're being accused of colluding with the Russians, the law firm.
The law firm. You have to working with the Russians to influence an election.
All right, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Just looking at what happened in the Concord Management Court hearing yesterday, where they basically said, look, what Mueller is charging is bogus. There are no crimes here. And they want the instructions that Mueller gave to the grand jury. They want discovery.
Mm-hmm.
This thing is moving along. It looks like the, you know, in a lot of these cases, I don't know if the judge has ruled on the instructions yet, but this case seems to be at least moving in a direction where very, very soon Mueller's either going to have to comply or the judge will force him to comply,
right,
or something will happen. But you've got to comply somehow, mm-hmm, when the defendant's lawyers are saying, look, we want to know these things, and the judge is going to rule either way on it. Let's go to Adam in Washington, D.C. Adam, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi, Adam.
Hi, how's it going?
Very good. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about a little bit about the whether it's illegal or not to create a social media profile pretending to be somebody else.
Yes.
I work for a company that does brand protection and identity theft protection for people, and we deal with that every day. Like, we go after for clients who's like CEOs, somebody's made their accounts. And I can tell you, it's not illegal. All it does is break the terms of service for the platform, and Facebook will delete the account.
Right.
That's
right.
It. Unless they can prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that they've stolen somebody's social media by somebody's like social security number by pretending to be somebody else.
Right.
There's nothing the law can do.
Well, and it's interesting so. Here because if you look at it, the blue check, that's a verified account. Every other account, essentially, by default, is unverified, which is to say that it's fake. But that's deemed by the companies, right, the private companies. That's a matter of contract between the user and the private company, not a matter of law.
So as long as I don't use, as long as I can use your identity and have a fake account, which then they can close down, but I can't use your identity to open up a credit card account.
Right,
I can't
right.
use your identity to get a, you know, voting registration or a license. At that point, I am committing identity an identity fraud crime.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly. I mean, you can pretend to be anybody you want. You cannot then, like, for instance, for the Facebook thing, if they can prove that it was a fraudulent bank account to pay for the ads,
right,
then that would be a break in the law. But just
right.
making an account, essentially it boils down to the term catfishing. So they're just going to go and tell the judge that these people catfished a couple million Americans, and the law just sees that as you shouldn't have listened to somebody you didn't know.
Right, but if I took that hype, because we don't know the specific allegations, but if I took that fake Facebook account and I said, for example, I'm from Russia, and I say that I'm Joe Smith from the United States, and because of that account, I am allowed to buy a Facebook ad, which is an advertisement ad. At that point, I might be breaking federal election law, because that in essence would be the identity fraud.
Yeah, if they're pretending to be somebody to
right.
pay for it that way, then I can see that being illegal. But if they use, but with Facebook, if you're paying for an ad, you can put in whatever name you want. It doesn't have to necessarily pertain to the ad that you're going to post it on. So they could have put a Russian company's name and paid with a Russian credit card from a Russian bank account and done it all through that way, because a normal person won't see that it was done that way. They just see who the advertisement was posted by. And so, yeah, you can name your company whatever you want, and you just have the banking records coming from wherever. And if you've opened that account legally, nobody in the public's going to know who paid for it or where it came from. But if they did not do that, then, yeah, that would be a bad thing for them.
Mm. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Adam. Okay. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
And that'll be interesting to see. It really gets down to the instructions for the grand jury, because that's going to get to the specific of what Mueller is getting at. And that's why they want those instructions.
Yeah. What is the absolute specific crime that you're charging us with, and what's the discovery?
Right.
You know, what is the evidence that you're claiming that you have against us? We have a right to know that. And it's going to show a lot. It's going to show whether Mueller actually has a case.
Well,
and
what's interesting that's here
what you're
is
getting to.
Will we not get to see all that evidence? Will that not become public record as a matter of this case? Will the American public not get to see that once all that evidence is presented and the case
yes, they
is
will.
Done?
They will get to see that.
Yep. Yeah. For VDO Road Log, here is your forecast.
No shortage for areas of rain across the country today. We could see some severe heavy showers and thunderstorms for portions of western Oklahoma as we go into the early part of the day. There is a slight chance of rain for western Texas into the southern plains. The heaviest of showers today, though, along I-80, Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio, along I-70 from Indianapolis into Pittsburgh, and the I-95 corridor north and south. Plenty of showers in that region, especially from West Virginia into New York City. Also, I-75 from Chattanooga into Atlanta and down to the Georgia-Florida line. Good dousing of showers for that area today. Rain for the Deep South will continue into tomorrow, with Alabama, Georgia, South, and North Carolina under the threat of the heaviest of showers. Light showers for the Midwest tomorrow, too. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thank you so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Tough guys, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
And I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley. I was going in one direction, but Eric, just what are you reading over there?
I don't know. I was just cruising around as we always do.
Yeah,
Daily Caller, whatever that is. David Creighton, who is the Ottawa bureau chief.
Wow.
The
capital of Canada.
Right.
No, that's Toronto.
Oh.
No, it's Ottawa. No, it's Toronto. By the way, that's from the movie Canadian Bacon.
Yeah. So, it's Saskatchewan. Okay. So, according to CBC News, the criticism, this is a university in Halifax, right?
Yes.
And these activists are on their social media page or on social media. They're criticizing them for assigning a First Nations history course to a white professor.
Ooh.
Here's my question. Have they done a DNA genealogy test? I'm asking, is there any, because, I mean, what if he identifies as a first?
Well, you know, Canada's one of those countries leading the charge on transracialism, too. So, I mean, that's the problem that you're going to have.
Remember, wasn't it Trudeau who corrected someone, and we say personhood? We don't say manhood.
Yes.
Or mankind. It was personkind.
Yeah, unless you're talking about the wrestler.
Right. And so the question now is, what if the white professor identifies as someone from a member of the First Nation?
Well, you did ask me the question, and I would like to respond to it. You did ask me the question during the break whether that
means, lots of questions here.
Whether that means that a white man can talk about civil rights.
Right.
Right.
Could you teach a civil rights course?
Only a Republican white man could do that in the United States. Democrat white men could not, because of the history of slavery, bigotry, and racism that comes from the Democrat Party. So all civil rights in this country, if you're to follow that line of thinking
right.
From Canada here in the United States, mm-hmm. all civil right, the only whites that would be able to teach about civil rights in this country would be white GOP members.
Yeah.
White Republicans.
Yeah.
And since the vast majority that helped pass the civil rights legislation were men, it would have to be white Republican men.
Yes.
Following, again, you know, the liberals' mindset on this. I'm trying to think like a liberal, and that's how I'm coming up with these logical conclusions.
What about a female teaching the Constitution?
No.
Or the Declaration of Independence?
No, can't. Because a woman wasn't a part of that.
Oh, this is getting deep. And man, am I going to be in trouble if my wife is awake right now.
You know, I love
him. You know those questions you were asking, honey? What questions? I didn't ask any. That was Gary.
Well, you know, when we get sarcastic and people don't realize it.
Right. Well, because it's the absurdity that a professor, my question is the professor well-schooled in the subject? Then end of story. Now, you can make the case that someone like me should not be teaching math. I get it. I totally get that one.
And none of us should be teaching calculus.
I am not qualified. Well, constitutional law. Do we have any female constitutional law professors?
Oh, many of them, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
All right.
You can't understand it because men came up with it.
Well, there's a reason we say founding fathers, not founding mothers. I think we all know why. Oh, crap, we're going to get a bunch of email. Man, this is not going to be a good day.
Yes, only white men can speak on the Constitution.
Exactly. Wow. Oh. Well, you extrapolate all that out.
We must remove all the female Supreme Court justices.
There you go. You can't possibly follow
the liberal logic.
You can't possibly interpret the Constitution.
You're a woman.
Listen, we're just applying their logic.
Right. We do not believe this.
To be clear, honey, if you're listening, we do not believe this. I can hear the locks on my front door changing right now.
No, she knows your sense of humor, just like...
I'm not sure she does.
If any of the five or six women that I've talked about all the time, the executives that are really in my, you know, my close ring of friends, mm-hmm. if they were listening right now, they'd be laughing like crazy because they know my sense of humor.
Well, I'm safe because for years I've
And they know how I think.
For years I've told my wife my radio name is George Norrie, so we're good.
All right, you ready for this?
Yeah.
This is really, our times are changing with mm-hmm. the Democrats.
Yeah, all right.
I want to read portions of this now of Willie Brown mm-hmm. from the San Francisco Chronicle.
Okay.
Trump is more popular than Democrats want to admit. It's time for Democrats to stop bashing President Trump. It's not going to be easy given his policies and personality. It might even mean checking into a 12-step program, but setting a winning agenda is like maneuvering an aircraft carrier. It takes time to change course. And if they want to be on target for the November midterm elections, the Democrats need to start changing course now. Like it or not, a significant number of Americans actually are happy these days. They are making money. They feel safe. And they agree with the president's trade policies, his call, protectionist trade policies, he said, his call for more American jobs, and even his immigration stance. We have talked about that the group that actually agrees with limiting legal immigration the most in this country are blacks.
Mm.
So the jobs growth report, the North Korea summit, and the steady economy are beating out the Stormy Daniels scandal and the Robert Mueller investigation in middle America, hands down. So you're not going to win back the House by making it all about him. Rather than stoking the base by attacking Trump, Democrats need to come up with a platform that addresses the average voter's hopes and concerns, not just the needs of the underdogs or whatever cause happens to be the media flavor of the week. Democrats need to look like the adults, not like another pack of screaming kids on the playground. Willie, you're listening to the show. Yeah. Willie, you're listening to the show. Mm-hmm. We're the ones that came up with that, except we said the gymnasium.
Yep.
And they need to stop now. Besides, when it comes to bashing Trump, Donald is doing just fine on his own. So obviously not a Donald Trump fan.
Right.
But again, a somebody from the left in the media who writes for the San Francisco Chronicle, who's looking at it saying, it's not working.
Is this part of the new talking points? It seems like over the last couple of weeks, there seems to be this, all right, enough with the Trump bashing, it's getting old kind of attitude. Enough with the, you know, we get it, you hate him. We don't like him either, but really, it's tiring. I mean, we've seen a number of indicators over the past couple of weeks. Here's my question. Is that a result of the Mueller thing kind of having holes punched in it and hitting some roadblocks along the way?
I think it's the polls that are starting to shift.
Because remember, I mean, and we talked about this, it was yesterday, I think, right? Mm-hmm. Where we talked about the, you know, the Mueller investigation and everything else and what people, it was the CBS poll, what people thought of it.
Mm-hmm.
Politically motivated. That's the majority of people, according to the CBS poll. They didn't put it on their network. As reported on Fox, a CBS poll reveals, well, that's, I think that's telling that, yeah, it's politically motivated, and really the whole politics of it all that, you know, you can see, I'm sure a lot of people going, yeah, I care for the guy, but really it's just tiring. It really is. Cause they're not converting anyone. Certainly they're not converting anyone, but beyond that, I think they're turning people off, even more people off to their side.
Well, frankly, I think the Democrats are even getting sick of Maxine Waters, thinking this isn't going to win it for us.
Right.
Maxine Waters screaming and her unintelligible statements that she makes, we're like, what?
Right.
Isn't going to cut it. As we've said, though, you even read I just read Willie Brown's column for you. He doesn't offer what specifics they should use. What specifics are you talking about? What is your jobs program? Remember, Schumer came out with his economic plan just about a year ago, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
It was like July or August of last year.
Mm-hmm.
And even the liberal press said, well, this really is an economic plan. It's the same that it's always been. It's about government money going to different programs to help those who are unemployed.
Yeah,
but it's not an economic plan. It's more of a welfare plan and a government redistribution plan. Nothing is new here. Remember Schumer? Everybody's going to like parts of this. That thing died so quickly. Why? It was the same old, same old. As you and I said, the biggest problem that the Democrats have is they can't get out of the identity politics. It's impossible for them to do so. How do they get there? How do they can't start. They can't come out and say tax cuts for corporations and more people. They can't do that.
Yeah.
And what are they saying? Okay, as Nancy Pelosi is saying, we're going to have to raise we're not going to raise taxes. What we're going to do is back off on some of the tax breaks and loopholes for the corporations, mm-hmm. and ensure that the middle class is taken care of, and we need to do it with bipartisan Congress. Yeah, of course you are. Whenever you want to raise taxes, you want to get as many Republicans on board as possible, don't you, Nancy?
Right.
But other than that, tell me of anything of substance. And the polls still keep coming out today. Even Democrats don't know what their party stands for.
Mm-hmm.
How do they change?
What do you promote? You can't change the nature of the activist on the left.
Let me give you an example. Take a guess who's running for Congress in New Hampshire. Bernie Sanders' son.
Ah.
And he's got, I do like his new, his political slogan, live socialist or die. He's running in New Hampshire. Among the biggest issues.
Live free or not.
Among the biggest issues, Levi Sanders is the only biological son of Vermont Senator and 2016 presidential candidate Bernie Sanders. He's running for Congress in New Hampshire, and he's speaking his mind about the problems in the Democrat Party. Among the biggest issues is Democrats don't make voters feel good about themselves. He said, unlike the incredible job Donald Trump and the Republican Party is doing, the Democratic Party has done a very good job or very poor job of bolstering people's confidence and self-esteem. And that has significant consequences when it comes to reaching out to low-income and working-class people, Sanders says, pointing to Hillary Clinton's penchant for talking down to voters.
Well, but, I mean, that's exactly what your dad is doing.
Yeah, oh, well, exactly. It's,
I know it is. Because right. You can't do it on your own. You need the government to do it for you.
Yeah. You have to talk down to people.
You can't earn a job. The government needs to guarantee a job for you.
Right. He, your father was the perfect one. Bernie was the perfect one for stating, you're a victim, you can't make it, the billionaires are great.
The rich, they're...
The billionaires are bad.
Exactly. They're the ones keeping you down, and you're not capable of doing anything on your own. The government needs to help you.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Coming up on the top of the hour, we'll have more on what Bernie Sanders' son thinks, who is running for office. They don't have anything, Eric.
Well, they don't. And
the Trump bashing isn't going to stop.
Well, and it's not going to work. It's actually hurting them. I think right now the left is hurting from all of that, and they don't know where to go. Because we asked the question, okay, what if the big blue wave? It's not going to happen. But if it happened in, well, I'm not going to say it's not going to happen. Right now, there's no indication that there's a big blue wave coming. But let's say it does happen. Then what? What happens in 2020 if you defeat him? Then what? What are you promising the people who vote for you? What are you promising America? Because there's no doubt it still works to promote the freebies, the gimmies. The government should do more. That's the Bernie Sanders of the world. Well, then beyond that, what? Because the American people got a taste, and they're starting to get a taste of, again, the private sector coming back. Again, it's still slow growth, but it is growth. You'll want to step in front of that?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.